This is the San Joaquin Sound Podcast. I'm your host, AJ Rodriguez. I'm here with Norm Hamlet. You played with the Farmer Boys, with Rose Maddox and the Maddox Brothers. You're a pedal steel guitarist for 49 and a half years with Merle Haggard's The Strangers. You've played on 9 gold and platinum albums. Let's go back to the start. Before all that happened, you were born in Woodville, but you grew up in Farmersville. So what type of music were you listening to growing up?
Well, I was listening to the Grand Ole Opry, because at that time, actually the Grand Ole Opry was coming out to California. We could actually hear the Grand Ole Opry on Saturday night.
On a radio show, right?
On a radio show. And so, boy, all of us was around that radio listening to the Grand Ole Opry. And, boy, I was listening to those guys playing and singing and all that, you know. And I told my dad, I heard Brother Oswald, he was playing with Acuff, Troy Acuff. And I heard that, you know, the six-string slide guitar, like a lot of people, you know. But anyway, I heard that sound on, you know,
The Grand Ole Opry,
and man, it just tore my ears off. I told my dad, I said, boy, I'd sure like to play one of them things, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, here we was gathered all around that, you know, that radio and listening to the Grand Ole Opry, and boy, I was just in hog heaven then, you know.
Yeah.
And, but anyway, your dad said, well, he said, I got to go in and get some parts for the cars out there, you know, because he had one of those lifts, you know, that raised cars up, and he'd get underneath and work on them and whatever it took, you know. And anyway, he said, I got to go in and get some parts for such and such car, you know. He said, I'm going into Visalia, and he said, they've got a music store there, and he said, I'll see if I can find you one of those things. Well, sure enough, when he came back, here he was, had this little, you know, Hawaiian guitar.
Yeah.
Actually. And, of course, I didn't know anything about it at that time. I never even picked up one, you know, then. I didn't know exactly how I had to work it, but anyway, he said, we'll find somebody that knows about it, you know. And sure enough, later on, there were some people coming through that was teaching what they called Hawaiian guitar, and so Dad had me go to them, you know, and take lessons.
So how did you get your first pedal steel?
We was playing, even though we was going to high school in Visalia, we got to play in this band that they had over there, you know, because they came by and asked my dad, you know, about it. They said, hey, I you know, heard your son is playing you know, Hawaiian guitar, but he said, we're over in Visalia, but he says, we need one of them Hawaiian guitar players.
Wow.
And he says, if you could go over to Visalia, he says, we can start, you know, playing with the Hawaiian guitar in the band. You know, they had all different instruments. They even had saxophone players and different things, but we was all playing strictly country music. You know.
So like a high school band, but instead of playing jazz or classical music, you're playing country.
It was country music. So anyway, that's what we wound up doing. Of course, we was in this place that, you know, that actually a orchestra set up, you know, but we was playing country music. So we was playing all the things country, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we would let a saxophone player or someone like that in the group as long as they wanted to play country. In other words, we'd do all the other things, but we'd come in and we'd get to do country music for an hour every day.
And how did you join the Farmer Boys?
Well, that was later on, of course.
Later on?
Yeah. You know, I was still going to school, you know. But the thing of it was, at that time, they were going to school. You know, Farmersville, you know, I was going to Farmersville school first before we graduated.
Yeah.
And they were actually in Farmersville before they got to go to high school too. You know, they were like me, except they was going to Exeter High School, where I wound up going to Visalia because I wanted to play country music. Well, they wasn't playing country music at the time. You know, they was going to high school. But there was a little a little restaurant there in town in Farmersville, and there was a big jukebox in there, and a lot of the different ones would go over and put money in the jukebox and hear that country music, you know. And one of the days, one of the guys that he wanted to play one of the country things, you know, so he put some money in and it started up and everything. And this guy, he started singing with a record.
Wow.
And so he was doing real good and everything. And all of a sudden, somebody in a different location started singing too. And they were wound up singing. One of them started singing the harmony with the other one. And so that's the way they wound up being the Farmer Boys.
Wow, that's cool.
Because they didn't know each other at the time, you know. And then once they started doing that, they got acquainted, you know, and said, "Hey," said, "won't we get together and maybe form a little group or something?" You know, and that's the way they got to be the Farmer Boys.
Yeah.
Because they were from Farmersville, so they said, "Let's call ourselves the Farmer Boys."
Yeah, that's pretty good. So that's your first band that you were really going out and touring with and stuff?
The first band I think I probably went out and played with. I actually went with another group, you know, and played some with some other bands before I got to go with them.
Oh, okay.
See, they wanted me to, they later on, they wound up being on Capitol Records. Wound up playing a lot with the Farmer Boys, though, and we got to go down to Lancaster. That's where I met Barbara's folks and everything down in Lancaster, you know, because we had a band at that time.
Barbara Mandrell?
Yeah, Barbara Mandrell. And like I said, I got acquainted, of course, with naturally her dad, and later I got to meet Barbara, you know, because she was like 10 years old, but she liked the sound of the steel guitar, see, and at the time, there wasn't any steel players down in Lancaster. So her dad, he was working at Edwards Air Force Base at that time. He had he was a policeman back in Texas. But once he got to California, he wound up working out at Edwards Air Force Base as a kind of like a policeman, you might say. But anyway, he passed that club every night going to work. So anyway, one day he stopped in and he, because we had a big horn speaker out front, you know, and you could hear what the music was inside, you know, when you passed it. And he heard me playing the steel guitar.
Yeah.
And he stopped in one day and he said, "Hey," he said, "I got a little girl." And he said, "She just loves the sound of those steel guitars." He said, "She wants to be able to play one, you know." He said, "She plays saxophone in school and she's good at it. But," he said, "she still wants to play one of them steel guitars. But," he said, "ain't nobody down here that plays one." And he said, "Boy," he said, "if I could get you to teach her how to get started and learn how to play that thing," and he said, "I'll tell you what," he knew he found out we were staying over, you know, we're staying in a motel for four nights, you know, and then of course we went back to Farmersville on the nights we were off, see, because that's where we still live in, really, you know, but we'd come down and stay at a motel for four nights, and then we go back home. But anyway, he told me, he said, "Hey," he said, "I'll give you a key to our house." And he said, "When you get through playing in the club, maybe you could come and just let yourself in." And he said, "The next morning," he said, "we'll have some breakfast." And he said, "You could maybe show her how to get started on that steel, you know." And so that's the way it started, anyway. And I'd done that. I'd go, when I'd get through you know, at the club, I'd get in my car and go to Lancaster. He'd give me a key to the house, and I'd just let myself in, go to bed, and then get up the next morning and have some breakfast, and then I'd start showing showing Barbara, you know, what we could do on that thing, you know.
Yeah, and she went on to be a very successful country artist herself and playing the steel guitar. That's so cool that you could be someone's mentor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, she done real good. I mean, I could show her something, and man, she would just grab it real fast and play that same lick I showed her or something, you know?
Wow.
And so anyway, later on, of course, you know, her dad, they even formed a band, you know, and her and her sisters actually went out and, you know, done some playing, you know, of course. But later on, she called me up one day and said, hey, said, you know, me and my sisters, we got a TV show that's starting to work down in Hollywood. And she said, I'd just like to show everybody your talent, you know, because she said, you're the ones that taught me how to play that pedal steel guitar and everything. And, you know, of course, she had learned some other instruments too, like I said, you know, before all that, you know, but anyway, she just told me about it and everything and said, I would like for you to come down and play on that show with me and the sisters, you know. And I said, boy, I'd sure like to do that too. And she said, well, she said, bring your steel guitar. And she said, we'll set up side by side. And said, I'm going to play that song. Or it was basically an instrumental, you know, I taught her. Wow. that I'd written.
Oh, that's so cool.
And I, you know, she said, I want to play that song that you taught me.
Was that right in the frets?
Right in the frets.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. I heard that song. Yeah. It's good.
And anyway, she wanted to do that one. Said, I'd love to. I said, because I wrote that quite some time ago, you know. And yeah, she said, I sure love that song. And let's just set up side by side and play it. And so we done it. And I was playing a green steel guitar at that time. It was a double neck green.
Yeah.
She told me, she said, I just wanted to do that song. You know, I said, I don't know it. She said, I just been playing it, you know, and getting used to doing it. Because she said, you know, I played it for a long time, and I just want to show everybody the song that you taught me, you know.
That's so beautiful.
And I thought, well, that's really nice, you know. And so we done it on a TV show, just side by side, you know. And that it's awesome. I don't know if you know, but it's actually on YouTube. If you put Barbara Mandrell and Norma Hamlet on the thing.
Oh, I'll have to look that up.
It'll come on there, the thing that we done on there, you know.
That's so awesome.
And I really appreciated that for the simple reason that later on I got a thing in the mail, you know, a publishing company. They had to pay a certain amount of money.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was working, you know, it was a publishing company. It was down out of
Hollywood. Because you're the songwriter, you get royalties.
Yeah, the publishing company was down in Hollywood, you know. So anyway, I got a letter that had me a pretty good amount of money.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Yeah, it was really something.
Last we were talking, you were still in the Farmer Boys, but how did you get to Bakersfield? Did you go to Bakersfield before you met Merle?
Yeah, I went down there, and I Bill Woods actually at one time called me to come down to the Blackboard Cafe.
Oh, okay,
here.
Cool.
And you know, to play some steel guitar. I don't know if the steel player that had usually done that, if he was sick or what, but anyway, he called me and asked me if I could come down and play steel at the Blackboard Cafe.
Yeah, and the Blackboard was located at 3801 Chester, so a little north of downtown.
Yeah, and so I got to do that with him, you know, and his band. And so anyway, naturally different ones actually, I guess, heard about me or something, you know, and they would call me to come and work here or there. And I wound up coming down to Bakersfield and playing at that time it was on the
Garces Circle?
Yeah. It was on the.
Are you talking about Tex Barrel House?
Texas Barrel House.
Yeah, Texas Barrel House.
See, I'm getting where I can't remember a lot of the stuff, but yeah, it was Texas Barrel House. So I come down there and I started working some with Louis Talley.
Oh, he had Talley Records, right?
Talley Records, yeah. Him and his cousin Fuzzy Owen. Him and Fuzzy Owen had started a record label, you know. And that's what it was called. They called it Talley Records, you know.
Yeah.
And Fuzzy, of course, he'd already had a thing going, you know. He was going down actually to Hollywood too and playing himself, you know. Like I said, I went in there and started playing some with Louis Talley because he had a band in there, and we had a piano and drums and bass and lead player. And we had, at that time, some of the guys actually were fine musicians, actually, because we had George French on piano, who was a great piano player, and he'd played a lot on Capitol. And guys that were going down and playing it on Capitol Records.
I mean, Bakersfield looked different back then, right? It was way different.
Oh, yeah. I can't even remember all the places that had country music, but there was a mess of them. There was a lot of clubs back in those days. I mean,
yeah,
you could just about go to any block you wanted to, and there's a country music band in there playing, you know.
Yeah, there's a ton of them. I mean, there was the honky tonks that were more like bars, and you had the Lucky Spot at 2203 Edison Highway.
Sure did, yeah.
And mm-hmm. Billy Mize played there for a long time.
Yeah.
You got the Blackboard that we already mentioned at 3801 Chester that Bill Woods played there for a while.
Oh, yeah.
We've got the Clover Club, which was also on Edison Highway.
Yeah.
And then Texas Barrel House,
mm-hmm.
which is right north of the Garza Circle.
Mm-hmm.
Rainbow Gardens, which was on South Union. Some dance halls like the Pumpkin Center Barn Dance that were kind of like more all ages.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I got acquainted, too, with Merle, actually, when I was still working with the Farmer Boys. Because Fuzzy Owen, he called me, and he says, hey, he said, I want to go back and visit my folks in Arkansas. Do you think you could fill in, like, on a Sunday and Monday? I thought about it, you know, because I was still working with the Farmer Boys on the, you know, down on the desert. But I said, well, come to think of it, I said, we're working Wednesday through Saturday. And I said, I'm down in Lancaster, but I said, I can come right through Bakersfield going back to Farmersville. And I said, I'll just get me a motel room on Sunday and set my stuff up at the club, you know, and play the steel there on Sunday. And also, you know, I'll play at that club on a Monday. And after I get through Monday, of course, I'd drive back to Bakersfield, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I went in there on Sunday, you know, and, you know, got ready to set my steel up and everything, you know, and got all ready to go and started looking at some of the players that was in the band, you know. And some of them I knew, you know. There's one that was playing the bass. I'd never met him before.
Yeah.
And so anyway, you know, I got all set up, ready to play, and I was playing a few things here, you know, playing a few licks and kind of just getting ready to go, you know. So the bass player come over and he said, hey, I've never met you before, but he said, I'm filling in for the bass player. I said, oh, you know, he said, my name is Merle Haggard. Of course, I didn't mean anything then, because, you know, this was way before.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, now, you know, shook his hand, glad to see you and glad to be playing with you. And he said, yeah, he says, I'm going to be playing the bass tonight and I'll be singing. I said, oh, really? That's great. He said, yeah. He said they needed somebody to play, you know, singer and bass player. And so he said, I got them both. He said, I'm playing bass and singing. And so he said, yeah, I'll be glad to hear you play some, you know. And so anyway, sure enough, you know, he started singing that night. And he was, at that time, he could actually still sing these different songs and sing them just like the one that sang them on the records.
Wow.
You know, he was imitating all these other people, see.
That's cool.
That was, you know, making a hit, you know. And so anyway, when we got through that night, well, I told him, I said, man, I said, I love your voice, you know, singing and everything. And he says, well, he says, hey, he says, Fuzzy Owen and Louis Talley, he said, they're going to start recording me. You know, and I said, well, boy, that'd be great. You know, I said, man, that's what you need to do is get out there. He said, I'll be doing a recording at, they had a studio, you know, they call it, nationally, the Talley Records Studio. But it was actually in a garage over Louis Talley's house.
Yeah. Cool.
But that's the way I got acquainted with Merle, see. I'd never met him at that time, you know.
Yeah. What club was that, did you say?
That was the Lucky Spot.
Wow. Yeah. So what was it like walking into the Lucky Spot? When you walked in, take me there, what did you notice?
Well, of course, the first thing I noticed was the bandstand, because I wanted to get my steel and put it on the bandstand, set it up and everything, you know. Because I was going to be playing that night, you know. And like I said, I looked over and basically there was Merle. But of course, at that time, I didn't know who he was, you know. But
yeah.
But then he told me, he says, hey, he says, Fuzzy, Louis, you're getting ready to record me.
Yeah.
And he says, if I get something going, he says, you want to go on the road? And boy, at that time, I said, you bet.
Yeah. Little did you know that'd be a long road, huh?
Yeah.
A lot of years.
Yeah.
What was it like performing in all these honky-tonks at the heyday?
Well, back in those days, it was a lot of fun, you know. Like I said, the musicians at that time were really good.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't make any difference which club you played at. Even, you know, if someone hired you to come in and play in their band, I mean, you could just think, well, hey, I'm going to have fun because all those guys are good musicians. And they were.
Yeah.
I mean, all the different clubs in town had guys that played country music, and I guarantee you, they played. they were just good, you know.
And, yeah.
This was back in the late 50s, you know.
Yeah. What was your favorite club to play?
Well, at the time, you know, I liked playing actually the Blackboard, I'd played later on. Of course, I played in Texas Barrel House, and that was a lot of fun too. Because boy, we the band just drew those people. I mean, the place was just packed every night. The people loved to come in and dance back then.
Yeah,
in other words, they didn't come in just to get drunk or like stuff like that. They came in, of course, to have a drink, but they wanted to dance. You know, and that's what they done. A lot of guys, they'd bring their wives, you know, and we'd play them some good country music.
What's the craziest thing you saw happen at the Blackboard? I heard sometimes it could get rowdy in there.
Well, I when I was working, I didn't see anything happening.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
The Blackboard.
Yeah.
But now the place,
Texas Barrel House.
Texas Barrel House. They even had a guy that took care of the drunks because, you know, they'd start fights in there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so they every once in a while they'd start a fight up. Of course, when they did, this guy, he was a bouncer, I guess you would call him, you know.
Yeah.
And he'd get them and maybe by the snap of the neck like this, and take them
grabbing
out.
Grabbing his shirt.
Take them outside, you know, and say, hey, you can't stay in here if you're going to do that, you know. That was, I think, some of the loudest stuff that was going on at that time. Because, like I said, some of those people would, I guess, get a snoot full of booze, you know, start a fight or something. I don't know how they'd start the fight. They'd get mad at some other group or whatever was in there, you know. And anyway, that guy, he'd have to grab them and take them outside and tell them how the cow ate the cabbage, I guess, you know.
Yeah. So by that time, you're playing the pedal steel now?
Yeah. Yeah, I was playing pedal steel by that time.
And that was brand new technology. Everyone's still learning it, right?
Pretty much so, yeah.
So you were in Bakersfield and playing a lot of different clubs and filling in. How did you join the Strangers with Merle Haggard?
Well, what happened is, you know, I was still, of course, playing, you know, in Bakersfield, and But Merle, you know, I'd played with him, so he knew how I played, you know, and he had another steel player that had been playing some things with him down in Capitol Records.
Ralph Mooney.
And so anyway, Ralph Mooney was going back home. You know, I don't think his wife liked him to go out on the road, you know, and at the time, that was the only time he'd ever been on the road, actually. But he kind of liked to have a few drinks, too.
I heard he tried to steal the tour bus once.
Yeah. That's what happened. He tried to steal the tour bus and go home because he'd been drinking. See, he thought he'd just go home and see Mrs. Moon, and then he'd come back and, you know, bring the bus back. And you know, and the only thing is he didn't understand that. You know, you couldn't drive. They were held back in some, I can't remember what state it was now.
But yeah, it wasn't a short trip.
But it wasn't a short trip. You can't just drive back and see your wife and then drive back in time to play the next show. You couldn't do that. They actually had snow on the ground. I can't remember what town they were in. It could have been Minneapolis or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, somewhere east. Way
back there. And he was playing steel, of course, for Merle. He got in the bus, and it had the air brake. And so he got behind the wheel. He started up. They always left the key in the ignition. And so anyway, he got out there, though, and he was going to go home and see Mrs. Moon. So he got out there and got on the bus and started it up and was going to go home and see Mrs. Moon. And so he put it in gear, and so he started up the front. The motel was kind of in a horseshoe, and it was in that horseshoe, but he was going to get on the road. And so anyway, he got up close to the front there and hit the brakes, and there wasn't any brakes because you had to build up your air. See, he didn't know enough about driving buses actually. And so anyway, he got up the front there and he put the brakes on, and of course he didn't have no air in the brakes because it was air brakes, and you had to have air in order to have some brakes. So he got up close to the front of the motel. You know, like I said, it's kind of like a horseshoe, and he got up close to the front of the thing and started to put the brakes on, you know, and there wasn't no brakes. The only thing that saved him, it had snowed so much there.
They hit a bank.
Some tractors, you know, that was moving all the snow. They were putting it in piles.
Yeah.
And so what happened? He seen the pile of snow, so he just ran it into the snow.
Wow.
And so the next morning, you know, they were all out there, you know, getting something to eat at the restaurant there. And so anyway.
Merle said Ralph Mooney's got to go home.
Well, what happened is, you know, after he had run into that snow pile, well, he had somebody go get Mooney and bring him up to his motel room and tell him. He said, you know, you can't be doing that stuff, you know. He said, you're going to stay out here and play the steel if you're going to do this. He got through talking to Merle, you know, and Merle just sat and listened to him for a little while, you know. And at the time, Merle was trying to get him to understand is you can't drive all the way out to California, you know, and you can't be this way. And he really is, I guess, really cussing.
Oh, yeah, really giving it to him?
Yeah, he was really cussing Merle out, you know, because the thing of it is, you know, Merle was telling him he couldn't do that stuff, see, and then the next thing you know, he was telling Merle, he said, well, screw you.
Whoa.
And so Merle grabbed him by the collar and the
shirt
belt.
Oh, the
belt down here. And run him out the door, you know. And it's a good thing that he was on the sound on the ground floor. He'd probably went over the
Oh no.
But anyway, he threw him out the door, you know. And so the next morning, anyway, is all, you know, getting something to eat in the restaurant there. And Mooney come in finally, you know, he came in because, you know, he realized then naturally that he wasn't going to get to go home. But anyway, he came in and he went over to where Merle was sitting, you know, and then he told Merle, he says, Haggy, he says, the next time you throw me out of the motel, he said, I wish you'd open one of them doors. He said, there was two doors and you threw me through one of them. And Merle said, well, he said, you deserved it. Really, you know. And so anyway, that was the last of his day. In other words, that was when Merle sent him home and wound up getting me to come out on the road with him.
So how did you feel joining Merle Haggard and the Strangers?
Oh, I loved it, you know, because I mean, that's what I was hoping I could get to do, you know, there. And so, like I said, I wound up, getting out of Bakersfield and going on the road with Merle, you know. I was in hog heaven.
Wow. So you got to tour all over the United States.
Oh, yeah. We just got to go every place. You know, I mean, I got to go overseas with him. I got, you know, just every place, you know.
So in the first few years that you were with Merle, what was your favorite part of that?
Well, I don't know. I was so glad to be with Merle, you know, because I got to be with other musicians that were really great. You know, they were good musicians. And I just got to be, man, I was just in hog heaven, really, because I got to be with that group, because Merle had some good musicians at that time. Of course, he had Roy Nichols. And
Roy Nichols is an amazing guitarist.
Yeah, and I can't even think of their name now. The piano player, I think, was with us at that time, George French. They were all good musicians, like I said, because I was just taking, his place.
Yeah, and after a few months, you became the band leader, right?
Yeah, I got, like I said, we were traveling around, playing, having a good time, and Merle decided he needed a band leader, somebody to take care of the band, you know. And that's when he called me and Roy Nichols up to the, was in a motel at that time, and he called me and Roy up to his room, and he said, it's between you and Roy. And Roy just looked up and said, no, it ain't. Because he didn't want it, you know. He didn't want to be the band leader. He just wanted to play guitar. And that's what he told Merle. He said, no, he said, I just want to play guitar. He said, I'll tell you what. He says, you know, at that time we had an old Flex bus. You know, it had the round, you ever see that round front and round back?
Are they the kind of ones that look metallic a little bit? Yeah.
He told Merle, he said, hey, he said, oh, you know, at that time, everybody carried their own equipment out to set it up and everything, you know. This was before we got a
roadies.
We had, later on, of course, we had a sound crew.
Yeah.
That done all that stuff, you know. But this at this time, you know, he told Merle, he said, I'll carry my amplifier out there and my guitar and I'll set it up. He said, we'll play the show. And he said, I'll get it and I'll take it back and put it on the bus. And he says, then show me my bunk. Because we had bunks on the bus, you know.
Yeah.
Each had, you know, at that time we had separate. Later on, of course, we had to have a bus that had a lot more bunks than we had on that first bus we had.
Yeah.
You know.
So what were your responsibilities as the band leader?
Well, I'm not sure that I had a lot of responsibilities, but I just made sure that everybody done what they should do, you know. I mean, in other words, if someone was wanting to drink or something like that, and you know, if we hired some guys or something, that's one of the first things I had to tell them. I said, look, you know, when we do a show, you're going to be sobered, you know.
Yeah.
Because I said, Merle wants everybody to be sober on that stage. And I said, now, look, you know, once you get off the stage and you get on the bus, I said, you might have a drink or two, you know. But I says, when we do a show, everybody better be off the booze to do the show. I said, he wants everybody to be top notch. And I said, he don't want somebody. He said, you know, those people pay a lot of money to see us do a show. And he said, I don't want somebody to be up there and be drunk. You know, he said, I want everybody 100%. He said, you get up there on stage. He said, but before we start the show, he said, you better not do anything to even, he said, I'm not going to have somebody up there on the stage just drunk. Yeah, we're not doing a show. He always figured if they get too drunk, naturally, they're not going to be able to do the show like we should be able to do it, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the way it got started kind of with us, you know. In other words, I knew that I had to tell everybody that we hired, you know. I told them, you know, I'd tell them, I say, look, I said, you know, if you go to work with us, Merle wants everybody on that stage to be 100%, because he says, them people are going to want a certain, you know, the best we can do.
Yeah.
You know, and Merle, he wants it that way too. So he says, if you drink or do any stuff or drugs or stuff like that, and you do them before the show, and you're not holding your end up.
Yeah, I see.
You ain't going to last long. And I'd tell them that, too, you know, when I hired them, you know. So we, like I said, we had a lot of players. A lot of them, might, you know, be boozing it a little bit, but they didn't do it before the show.
Yeah.
And I kind of had a little thing that I used to do, too. What I'd do is when I'd get rid of somebody, I'd usually wind up say, hey, so-and-so, you know, maybe even one that played the bass or whatever, you know, whatever his instrument was. I said, hey, won't you meet me down at Denny's? You know, and most of them at that time hadn't went through the deal, you know. I'd hire them, not hire them, but I would ask them to go to Denny's. I don't want you to meet me down at Denny's. Let's have a cup of coffee, you know. So I'd go down, we'd meet at Denny's, you know, and have some coffee and maybe something to eat even, you know. And I'd tell them, I said, hey, I got to let you go. They say, well, why? You know, I said, because you're drinking. I said, Merle, he don't allow that, you know. And so it got to be a thing, you know. Sometimes the guy, if we was hiring a new guy, you know, for the band or something, some of them would tell him, said, hey, if Norm asks you to go to Denny's and have a cup of coffee, don't go. Because that's what I'd do. I'd just get them to go to Denny's and I'd give them the business, you know, tell them, say, hey, I'm going to have to fire you because I said, you've been doing a bunch of drinking or doing this and that. And I said, Merle, this ain't going to allow it, you know. You know, if one of them wasn't in that good a condition or something or couldn't take it, you know, I mean, some guys, I guess, just couldn't give up the booze, you know.
Yeah.
And I was the one that had to tell them, say, well, that ain't going to work out here. You know, Merle he wants everybody on their toes. He said he wants them to give the best show that they know how. And it's kind of funny in a way because later on, you know, we wound up getting a sponsor for a liquor company. They was our sponsor. And,
wow.
And it's kind of funny too because what they do, they'd bring a whole case of their
free liquor for everyone.
Free liquor for everyone. See, they thought I guess they must have thought all of us was drinking liquor, you know, and so anyway, we'd have a whole box of it underneath the bus, you know, and actually, what Merle would do, he'd wind up giving it to some of his friends or people that even come to the show or. So we had a sponsor there for a while, you know.
Let's talk about the Bakersfield sound. Now, you're one of the pioneers of the Bakersfield sound, and a lot of people argue what the definition of the Bakersfield sound is. So I was wondering, what does Bakersfield sound mean to you?
Well, to me, actually, the Bakersfield sound, we just figured, hey, we had great players. You know, and we just went down the line, you know, guitar, of course, and bass, drums, you know, all of those. You know, that was the Bakersfield sound, because that's, you know, we had a lot of players around Bakersfield that played, you know, good country music. And so we started saying, hey, we're playing that Bakersfield sound.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the way we got, you know.
Yeah, one thing I think that's cool about the Bakersfield sound that was different than Nashville at the time is that the Bakersfield sound, Merle Haggard and Buck Owens mm-hmm. both had their own band,
mm-hmm. yeah.
like the Buckaroos or you were in the Strangers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas in Nashville, they had like a studio band and they would just change the singer.
Well, yeah. See, when we went out on the road, of course, you know, let's face it, Buck and Merle was doing so good. I mean, hit records and all this. They kept, you know, they kept trying to get Merle and Buck to come back to Nashville. They kept saying, hey, you guys need to be back in Nashville. They thought, I guess, that we just couldn't make a go of it in Bakersfield, you know. And the only thing is, hell, they was making hit records. He said, well, hell, I should be back in Nashville. We got such and such going for us, and, you know.
Yeah.
And they just basically what they was doing in a nice way was just kind of telling them to stick it in your ass, because we ain't coming to Nashville. We're doing okay here in Bakersfield.
Yeah.
You know, but and there was word getting making our hits. Why should we have to go all the way back to Nashville? So they kind of just told Nashville what they could do, you know. And the thing of it is, later on, a lot of people in Nashville were really irritated, because what happens is a lot of their side guys. See, Merle, he always paid our guys great money. In fact, once I got to be the band leader, he called me in fact, in one of the rooms, you know, we were on the road. And
yeah.
He said, hey, won't you call Nashville and find out how much their band members are getting paid? And whatever it is, pay our guys double.
Wow.
If you don't think that started some shit, boy, I'll tell you.
I bet it did.
A lot of guys found out back in Nashville that we were getting paid double what they were getting to go out on the road with those guys back there, you see.
Yeah.
And a lot of the Nashville guys were really getting irritated, you know, so. But that, like I said, that's the way Merle was. So he was really nice to his band, and, you know, people that work with him or for him or, you know, whatever. He was just great to be around, actually. Just, that's all there is to it. I mean, he was just a great guy, you know.
That's awesome. So let's talk about some of the music. What are some of the favorite songs that you have that you recorded?
Oh, I'll tell you, boy, there's so many of them.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot.
He had written so many good songs, you know, and made hits with them. And at the time, I'm just, you know, I'm thinking, boy, I mean, he's writing them songs and they're making hits. And I just, sometimes I just couldn't hardly believe it, you know, because he was doing so well. And like I said, he was treating everybody good and treating, you know, I mean, he was just, like I said, he was just great to work with.
Yeah. I just wondered, like, you know, that one of his big hits was Mama Tried, but that one doesn't have much pedal steel in it, only at the beginning. But is there any songs that have a lot of pedal steel that are your favorite because you got to play a lot on?
I got to play on a bunch of them, you know.
When Merle was writing the songs and he said, I want a steel part for this, did you write the steel part? Or did he tell you what to play, or how did that work?
No, usually we just go into the studio and I just play what I played. You know.
You're improvising.
We just improvise. He would let me play whatever I had in my head, I guess, you know.
And, that's cool.
There's one song that we done, though, at Capitol Records, and I'm sitting there with my steel, and so we're doing this. I'm trying to think of the name of the song, but anyway, it's got a thing in it. Wish I could think of the song. But anyway, we're doing this song, you know, and the piano player is playing his thing, and the guitars are doing their stuff and everything. And so when it comes time, there's a thing there that we called it Batman, because doing the song and everything, and it comes on it, Batman. And I'm here. I am still. I get to play. I tell everybody, hey, I wasn't even on that song. I said I was. I was playing Batman with the rest of the guys. So I said, we played, you know, we called it Batman because we was doing the dun-dun there.
Mama Tried sounds like that.
Well, I wish I could think of the song, but I don't know. Boy, it's just... That is it. That's it. That's
right there,
Batman,
yeah.
Batman right there.
Okay, yeah.
See, I wasn't even, you know, Seal wasn't playing. I knew his guitar players, you know.
Yeah, I don't know every single Merle Haggard song, but I knew that one. And you,
yeah.
See, I was like, I can hear it in my head.
Yeah, see, I couldn't even think of it. I'm just getting where I can't remember a lot of stuff.
Boy, that's okay. Plus, I'm asking you a lot of questions. Okay, so, I had a question about another song, Okie from Muskogee. I've heard people argue if it's a little bit a joke or like satire at all or tongue-in-cheek. What do you feel about that one?
Well, I mean, I love the song because, you know, let's face it, his folks were from Oklahoma, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And so anyway, he wrote that song, you know, from because that's where his folks lived, you know. But anyway, what happened is at the time we were out there, you know, even Muskogee, there was a lot of those guys that were even from California, and they was pissed off at Merle because he was trying to think of how it went. Anyway, they came to the show, and then they came out to the bus, and they were going to whoop our ass.
Oh no!
Because of the things, the song, the way the songs went out. Out in California, I guess those.
Oh yeah.
The ones, what do you call them?
Hippies.
Yeah, hippies. Anyway, what's that song that has some of that stuff? We don't.
Okie from Muskogee.
Okie Muskogee. Actually, it's one that I think they were really pissed off about because they were from California, you know, being in. Up around San Francisco, and they heard that song. That anyway, it tells in there. It kind of runs the guys that are thinks they're hippies, you know.
Yeah.
And they wanted to whoop our ass after the show and everything, you know. And we were out there at the bus, you know, and so anyway, here they come, you know, the ones that thought they were hippies, and they was going to whoop our ass, you know. And finally, Merle just said, "Hey," he said. It's just a song, and he said, I just writing a song, and he said, I just love hippies. He said, I don't have no bad feelings, you know, about those guys out there, you know, because they were doing what they wanted to do, you know. Anyway, he kind of just calmed them down, you know. Next thing you know, shit, they're our buddies.
Wow.
Before we got out of the parking lot, you know. Going to our next date, a bunch of them come up to us and started shaking our hands and all that kind of stuff. And some of them were from San Francisco. Yeah,
that's cool.
I thought that was really good. You know, here we are, you know, thinking they're going to start a fight with us. You know,
Okie from Muskogee has been covered a lot of times in parody too. Even bands that are like hippie, you know. Bands like Grateful Dead covered that song.
Well, hell, the guy that was a leader in Grateful Dead was a steel player and a guitar player.
Oh, was it Jerry Garcia?
Yeah, Jerry Garcia.
I didn't know he played the steel. That's cool.
He sure did. And the thing of it is, like I said, he was a big fan.
Yeah.
And another one, too, for Rolling Stones.
Whoa, you played with the Rolling Stones?
We opened a show in Little Rock, Arkansas.
That's cool.
And they actually called up. We were on a tour ourselves, and they called and wanted us to open the show. And I think it was somewhere in Oklahoma, I believe, or some big town. And they wanted us, you know, Merle, to open the show. And they called him, you know, and said, "Hey, you know, can you open the show for us?" And I can't remember if it was Tulsa or, you know, one of those towns, you know.
Yeah.
And Merle said, "Well, I got to check my schedule, see, you know." And of course, he checked his schedule, and he couldn't do it because we was working someplace else. You know, we was working at that time, and so he had to call, you know, and tell him and said, "No, I can't do it." He said, "We're working such and such," and you know, they understood. They said, "Well, we'll see if we can call you some other time." And at that time, Earl, of course, he thought, "Well, that's the last time we'll hear from him." You know, he thought, you know, we turned them down. You know, so they'll just quit. You know, they won't ask us.
But they asked again.
Yeah, they won't, and they wound up calling again when we were doing that show in Little Rock, Arkansas. They called Earl and got him on the phone. You know, said, "Hey, we're doing Little Rock, Arkansas. Can you come and open that show?" And so Merle, he looked at his schedule and everything, and, "Oh yeah," he said, "we can do that one." So we opened for the Rolling Stones in Little Rock, Arkansas, and come to find out they were big fans of Merle's. And when we got through doing the opening and the show and everything, and we were at a big place in. It was one of those outdoor type things.
Yeah, you know, like an amphitheater.
Amphitheater type place. But anyway, when we got through with doing our part of the show, we walked backstage, you know. And the thing, it had a backdrop on that one. You know, if you were out in the front of the stage and you looked back, tried to look back, you couldn't see what was backstage. But if you was backstage looking out, you could see all the people
all
and everything.
People, all the audience.
Yeah, all the audience and everything.
Wow.
But you couldn't do that if you was out front looking in, see?
Wow.
So here we are. We're getting all of our shit out of the way so they can start their show and everything. So we go backstage, and here's all the damn Rolling Stones. You know, and we get thinking, well, wonder what the deal is, you know. They pissed off at us or something, you know. And anyway, once we all got off stage and everything, they were back there. They started shaking everybody's hand.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, just loving what we'd done. He just said, "Boy, Merle, you done a great show and all this shit." Merle said, "Really?" Yes, you know, and they was just big fans, and then of course the guitar player too. He was also a steel player with the Rolling Stones.
Oh, okay.
You know, and of course he came over and wanted to introduce himself to me, you know, because I was a steel player. You know, we got to do some pictures with them, you know, and that was before they started their show. They wanted to take pictures with us, and we got to be backstage with all the. Rolling Stones, shaking their hands and talking to them and all that kind of shit, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so anyway, they, of course, naturally, when it's time for them to get on the stage, well, they had to all run to get out there and start the show. And so anyway, their stage manager come and told us, he said, "Hey, guys." He said, "Boy, that's the first." And we went, "First of what?" He says, the Rolling Stones never did want to meet the bands that were opening the shows for us. He says, "You're the only damn band I ever seen that they wanted to, you know, get out there and shake hands with you and take pictures and all that." He said, "They don't do that shit."
Wow.
And he said, "They done it with you guys." I wish I'd have kept a... Yeah, we all should have kept a thing,
a diary,
you know, but you know, we just didn't do it.
It's hard to think of it at the time, you know.
That's it. At the time we didn't even think about it, you know.
Yeah.
And, later on, we all wished that we'd have done this or that, because you know, we could have wrote a damn book, you know.
Yeah.
In fact, different ones keep wanting me to write a book too, you know. You know, I don't know. I'm just kind of, I've been thinking about it for quite some time. But anyway, I don't know. I might
That'd be cool.
Might try to get started on one, see if I can remember all this stuff.
I mean, you're part of the Bakersfield sound. And because of that, you end up representing Bakersfield throughout the world. How do you feel being an ambassador for Bakersfield?
Well, I felt damn good about it, you know, because like I said, we did get to be, you know, a lot of people looked at us as a great group, you know, and a lot of them said, boy, we wish we could do it like you do, you know. And we just tell them, say, well, you know, we just wanted to do the best we could out there with the band, you know.
Yeah. In the future, what are your plans for the future with country music?
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know, you know, it's hard to say which way country music is going to go, because, you know.
Performing. You're still performing, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you were playing at the Rustic Rail Saloon just recently.
Yeah, recently, and like I said, I've been going out with Mario Carboni, and we've been doing a lot of cruise ships.
Cool.
And we've went out on the Columbia River, you know, out of up in Oregon. We've got on the Columbia and got on that cruise ship there and went for. I remember one time we went for 49 days on that cruise ship on Columbia.
That's so awesome that you're still playing country music, and you played with Ernie Lewis too.
Yeah,
he's very good.
Yeah, yeah, we played with him, and like I said, we've done a lot of stuff with Ernie, you know.
And he plays the fiddle, the guitar, and the mandolin, actually.
Yeah, yeah. He plays the mandolin too, you know. And of course, he was, you know, he's done a lot. I've done a lot of shows with him here in town, and I even recorded some things.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a little studio up in his house, you know, second floor.
That's cool.
And I've me and Mario actually both have got to do some things in his little studio that, you know.
That's awesome.
But like I said, I've done a lot of stuff with Mario. Of course, I go up into Oregon and Washington and, you know, just all kinds of places with Mario. I've been back to Texas and, you know, just he's used me on a lot of stuff, you know. Yeah. So we really, really had a good time.
And you have a solo album, right?
Yeah.
We always end the show talking about local music. And I was wondering, what local musicians do you want the people that are listening to listen to?
But like I said, once in a while, I'll go to different places they have here in town. You know, somebody will call me up, want me to play. And if I'm home, hell, if I'm not out touring somewhere, well,
yeah,
I'm liable to just go down and play with them. You know?
And Norman Hamlet. Norman Hamlet was my steel guitar teacher. When I was almost 11 years old, he began teaching me. Do you remember writing the frets that you wrote?
Yeah, I believe so.
Uh-huh. I hope you do, because we're going to do it for everybody, all right? Yeah. One, two, three.